Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Cheating. I know you've been cheating.
Sure, when there's a financial swindle, it's in the headlines. The number of zeros behind it. Bernie Madoff, $65 billion. $100,000 Tom Daschle didn't pay in taxes, or $10,000 Tom Daschle didn't pay in taxes. But counting the zeros isn't probably the best way of figuring out the significance of various levels of cheating, particularly if you're talking about the financial sector. With us still is Dan Ariely, James B. Duke Professor of Behavioral Economics at Duke University and author of Predictably Irrational. It's the small impulse of dishonesty that's maybe more destructive than the huge number of zeros behind a financial scandal like Bernie Madoff, or even you were infuriated by these bonuses at AIG. That's the wrong place to look?
That's right. So here is what we basically did. We tempted people to cheat. We gave some people a sheet of paper with 20 simple math problems that everybody could solve, and we gave them 5 minutes, not enough time to solve them all. When the 5 minutes were over, we asked them to count how many they got correct, to give us the sheet, and we paid them $1 per question. Turns out people solve 4 problems in 5 minutes. We paid them $4. Other people, we gave them a chance to cheat. We gave them the same sheet. When the 5 minutes were over, we said, please shred your piece of paper, eliminate all evidence, and tell us how many questions you got correctly. Now the average went up to 7. Now these people did not become smarter. They just cheated. But interestingly enough, from about 5,000 or 6,000 people we tested so far, we had only a handful that cheated a lot, that basically claimed they've solved a lot of it. We had thousands of people that cheated just a little bit.
Ah, so the issue of figuring out the dynamic of the Madoff, you know, high-value cheater who's doing it all the time versus the economic value of a lot of people doing a little bit of cheating, that's what you're trying to do here.
That's right. And if you think about me as an economy, I've lost about $100 to the high cheaters, and I lost thousands of dollars to all the people who cheated just by a little bit.
So that would be the people who cheated a lot are the Madoffs, okay?
Yes.
But the people who cheated a little bit are the ones who made maybe bad risks on subprime mortgages, the people who fudged the data on their mortgage application, that sort of thing.
That's right. And actually what we find is that the people who cheat just a little bit, which is the majority, basically all of us, there are things that make us able to cheat a bit more and things that make us cheat a little less. And it's not what you think. Usually people think it's about the economic incentive. How much money do I stand to gain? Turns out we pay people 10 cents, 50 cents, $1, $2, $5, $10 per correct question. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Still, a lot of people cheat just a little bit. We change the probability of catching them. They shred half the sheet, the whole sheet. They paid themselves from a ball of money. Doesn't matter. What matters is what people feel is okay. We basically want to look at the mirror and feel good about ourselves. And at the same time, we want to benefit from cheating. I call this the individual fudge factor. And the question is, what changes this fudge factor? So, for example, when we get people to try and recall the Ten Commandments, and in our sample of college students, nobody could recall the Ten Commandments.
Of course.
Cheating goes away.
Cheating goes away?
It goes away.
So you simply say to them, all
please,
right, what's right and wrong? Remind them of what is right and wrong. Cheating is wrong, and the cheating goes away.
We don't remind them. They remind themselves. Even when we get self-declared atheists to swear on the Bible, they stop cheating. So that's about decreasing the fudge factor. But even more disturbing, there's a question of what increases the fudge factor. And there are two important topics here. One is when people cheat not for money, but for something that is different. When they finish the test and they come to us and say, Mr. Experimenter, I solved X problems. Give me X tokens. We pay them in tokens, and then they walk 12 feet to the side and change a token for a dollar. Cheating doubles. Now think about it. How would you feel about taking a pencil from work versus taking 10 cents from a petty cash box? They feel very, very different.
So that's why credit default swaps seem so easy. But if it was actual cash, people might be disincentivized.
That's right. And I feel in some sense cash brings people back to their honesty, where all of these things that are so removed from cash makes it much more easy for people to justify and tell themselves stories. So basically, if you think about Wall Street, we paid people a lot of money to look at mortgage-backed securities as a good deal. Imagine somebody paid you $10 million, John, if you could see them as a good deal. You would be able to see them
I
as a good deal.
I probably would figure out how to see them as a good deal. Yeah.
If the way to view them was very flexible and there were multiple steps removed for money, that will help as well. But the final step, and actually what worries me about Madoff, is the final experiment we did. And here is the setup. We prepaid everybody. So if you were in the experiment, you would get an envelope with $10 in upfront. And we hired an acting student to stand up 30 seconds into the experiment and said, Mr. Experiment, I solved everything. What do I do next? The experiment said, you solved everything. Go home. So now we have a Madoff kind of a person who basically stole in an egregious way all the money. And the question is, what will happen to everybody else in the experiment who was sitting in the room?
And?
What do you think?
I don't know.
Ran for the hills with the dollar bills.
You think they cheated more?
They didn't finish. Right?
Well, so here's what happened. It turns out it depended on what kind of sweatshirt that guy was wearing. We ran this experiment at Carnegie Mellon. All the students were Carnegie Mellon students. When the student who was cheating was wearing a Carnegie Mellon sweatshirt, he was part of the group, cheating went up.
Wow.
But when he was wearing University of Pittsburgh sweatshirt, you know, it's kind of a rivaling university, cheating actually went down. And I think this is actually an important lesson for Madoff. It turns out that when people who are in the in-group are part of our social group cheat, we find it more morally acceptable to cheat a bit more even ourselves.
The Washington Club, the Washington Old Boys Network, that's how it works. They're all wearing the same T-shirt. They're all cheating or flexibly sort of fudging. And, you know, it's almost impossible to correct a system like that.
That's right. And from that perspective, we can think about whether the Madoff scandal is just kind of chapter one and whether his legacy will be that he's basically creating a new standard for what the people in his in-group are going to deem acceptable in terms of cheating from now on.
And to say nothing of the fact that we're not even looking at the small bits of cheating in the same way that we're looking at Madoff. Dan Ariely, James B. Duke, professor of behavioral economics at Duke University, author of Predictably Irrational. That was fascinating.